Red Film Radio.
Red Film Radio.
Interview.
Interview.
Film fans everywhere may be familiar with the Pordenone Silent Film Festival, also known as Le Giornate del Cinema Muto. This is a yearly film festival that has done much to promote film preservation on a global scale and present international silent film lovers with some of the best screening experiences of gems from the early days of film they could ever hope for. Recently, in response to the pandemic, the festival announced that its edition for this year will be taking place online. And so here to talk with us about it, I welcome to the show Jay Weisberg, film critic for Variety and director of the Pordenone Silent Film Festival, as well as a good friend of ours. Jay, welcome to the Big Fred Tuesday.
Thank you, Matt. Nice to be here.
There's a lot going on, and I just wanted to know, first of all, what your current thoughts are about this kind of global pandemic, because you are based in Rome, the capital of a country that was among the worst hit by COVID-19, especially in the initial stages. I mean, what's the situation there at the moment?
At the moment, it's really positive news in the sense that yesterday, or rather 2 days ago, the number of new infections was the lowest that it's been since February. So that was really a relief to hear. But and things have really reopened. In fact, today museums have reopened for the first time. There is a sense of life coming back onto the streets. For the most part, everybody does wear masks. They're required inside, anywhere you go, gloves, in a lot of places as well. My concern is that I don't think people are social distancing as much as they should be on the streets. I don't think that people have a full understanding of where their bodies are in relationship to other bodies. Whereas during the lockdown, absolutely they did. But people are just so tired of it and fed up, and I do understand that. I am concerned about second and third waves.
I mean, I'm wondering as well, was there a moment in particular when you realized that this situation was serious and that it would get as bad as it got?
Yeah, I guess just when everything suddenly shut down. I mean, I remember the last restaurant that I went to before the lockdown started, and that was actually the day before the lockdown started, and already there was a sense of tension and discomfort. And so once that started, and there was a true lockdown here in Rome, there had already been one, of course, in the north in Lombardy and parts of the Veneto. But then just the quiet was really exceptional, because I live really in the heart of the city. I'm just off of Piazza Venezia. It's an area that's just full of movement and life. Even though because of Airbnb, there's been a sort of depopulation, of full-time residents in the center. But still during the day, it's quite vibrant. And, that silence, that eeriness, even when I would go out maybe once every 4 days to buy food. But even going outside, what you think is going to be some kind of respite from being indoors, that even outdoors, there was additional tension just because of how surreal it was. There was a sort of eerie feeling.
And how are you sort of dealing with it personally, but also professionally? Because I mean, it's been a time of change, I guess.
Yeah, let's pass over on the personal. I mean, it's been hard, I think, for so many of us. I think it's been difficult to find ways to concentrate on work, particularly any kind of creative work. So writing has been really, really tough. Like so many people, I've cleaned my apartment lots of times. I've polished the silver lots of times. I've tried out more new recipes. I'm cooking all the time, you know, all of that sort of thing that everybody has been sharing more or less, because it is so difficult, or has been so difficult, to focus. In terms of work, also, that's been a big problem. Variety pretty much dried up my work, because my job for them basically requires going from film festival to film festival, and clearly that stopped. So that's been troubling, to say the least. And then for Pordenone, we made the announcement on Friday that we were canceling the live edition in October and taking it online.
Was it a difficult decision to take?
No, actually, for me, it wasn't a difficult decision at all. I wanted us to make the decision even earlier, because I think that the earlier that festivals make these announcements, the more respectful it is to our public. And quite early on, I realized there was just no way that we could hold a live event. I don't see how live events are really going to be possible in any, so-called normal way until there's a vaccine. And the reason I'm saying that there's multiple reasons why I'm saying that. First of all, the Giornate is unlike other film festivals in that we don't have shelf lives in the sense that we're not looking for the latest films. We are, however, looking for new restorations. And since all the world's film archives have been locked down and closed since February or March, it means that the workflow is completely shut down. It means that restorations have stopped, digitizations have stopped. There's no way to get links to films for me to see, for scholars to see, for the musicians to see. None of that is possible. So you've got that as a major factor in making the decision to cancel the festival. But on the top of that is in Italy, the rules are now that once theaters do reopen, and we're still not exactly sure when that's going to be, when they are able to reopen, even the largest theaters will only be able to hold a maximum of 200 people. Now, for us, we have a theater that holds just about, I think, 920, I want to say. So if we're cut down to 200, how on earth can we be the people to say you can get in and you can't? So the idea of having any kind of equitable festival that is open to all is an impossibility. If you have an outdoor event, you can have as many as 1,000 people. So that does make it easier to do. But on top of that, I have multiple concerns. I have the concerns about the queues going in and out of theaters, which is always a scrum. I have concerns about what happens when somebody who's seated in the middle of a row suddenly needs to get up and get out. And has to brush past people. I'm concerned about the need for disinfecting of cinemas between screenings and how much time that takes. And in addition, I'm also, I've been really surprised at how little people are talking about the psychological aspect of what it means to be in a cinema where there are multiple spaces all around you. And you know that those spaces aren't because they can't fill the seats with people, but in the sense that, you know, they couldn't sell tickets. They can, but those are empty seats for a reason, and that's because of a pandemic. So the idea of those spaces for me are so filled with tension. How do you enjoy watching a film? How do you allow yourself the escapism of laughing hard and feeling that community of spirit that is what a film festival is meant to be, if you're surrounded by the tension of these empty spaces? And that's something I think that people haven't been talking about, and they need to be talking about, because there's just too much emphasis, I think, on people thinking, oh my God, we can't be without film festivals. That's our lives. Well, actually, let's think about that.
So when you were like taking this, when this decision was taken, I'm just trying to picture the meetings. Was there anyone who was saying, no, the festival should definitely still go on?
There was the discussion about waiting and seeing, because everything is so uncertain at the moment and things are changing rapidly all the time. There were some people who were suggesting that it would be a little bit better to wait a bit more, but then that became untenable. And everybody on the board agreed that the sooner we let our public know, the more respectful it is. Just in terms of things like, you know, buying plane tickets, not that you can buy a plane ticket now. The airport in Venice is closed. We don't know when that's going to reopen. The airports in Italy that are reopening are Rome, Naples, and Milano. That's it. So how would people even be able to come if they could come? What kind of international travel is going to be possible? All of those factors were in play when we were having these discussions. And so at this point, it was absolutely unanimous that we realized we need to cancel. And then we began to think, okay, well, what do we do? How do we keep the community together? And the only way at the moment is online.
So just to clarify, the festival, there will be no theatrical screenings at all, and the festival will be completely online, and the films will be streamed, I guess, from a platform.
That's correct. eventually we would like to have some kind of live event in Pordenone when possible and when it's safe. That would be for the people of Pordenone rather than for the international festival crowd that we cater to. But yes, the idea at the moment is to keep to our dates, which is October 3rd to 10th. And probably have one feature film a day plus, some shorts. And in addition to that, there would be introductions by archivists, introductions by musicians, conversations after each screening with the archivist, a scholar, possibly also the musician. I'm in discussion with musicians about doing some kinds of classes online, to give the public a better understanding of what their craft is in terms of composing and improvising for silent films. So we're looking to really make this, as I said, a kind of community space to keep everyone together. It would be available. Each film would be available for a 24-hour period. And, in addition, then it would be by accreditation.
Jay, one of the things that, the film festival is known for, I guess, is the live musical accompaniment to the films. Now, despite the fact that the festival is going online this year, are we still going to be able to look forward to some great music to the films?
There will still be, absolutely, there will still be music and really phenomenal musical accompaniment by our usual group of musicians. They're the musicians who are really the best in the world for silent film, but it won't be live. There just isn't a way to do that. So what will happen, for us, the important thing is to guarantee the highest possible visual and audio quality. And really the only way to do that is to have the film recorded and then the music recorded. It's a bit frustrating, but if we can also, after those feature films that are screened, if we can then have, let's say, a 45-minute live program with the musicians, where each day there will be a different musician who's going over their craft, I think that would help a lot in terms of furthering an understanding of what silent film music is and actually reaching a larger audience than we normally can.
Gotcha.
Also, yeah. one of my concerns is that because people are in so many different time zones, that also makes the idea of a live event really difficult, where everybody could be on at the same time. So, for example, if we have a discussion after the film with a scholar and a musician and an archivist, I want to open it up to questions from the public, but that would have to be in a kind of text chat format for those people who happen to be tuning in at that moment.
Yeah. Like that's, I mean, you hinted at it earlier. One of the great things about Le Giornate is that it's just the warmth of the atmosphere. People getting together after the screenings and talking about movies, and there are people from all over the world. So I was just wondering whether there were any plans of sort of keeping the silent film community connected during the days of the festival.
I mean, that's for me the only way that we can is by organizing some kind of these sorts of discussions and perhaps some kind of chat platform that I'm not really familiar with at the moment and how that would work. But we're talking with a platform here in Italy to figure out what the best way is of doing all of this. And I'm in discussion with all the musicians at the moment to see what they themselves want to do and what their ideas are. At this point, because this is such a brand new world for all of us, it's I'm open to a lot of ideas and just trying to see what suits our community best.
I know that it's too early to talk about the program itself, and maybe we can have a chat later on, you know, in the year to find out more about the program itself, if you're up for that. I'd be delighted to ask you some questions about the actual program. But I was thinking about, like, this decision and how sort of big it feels. And I was wondering whether, I mean, we talked about film preservation a little bit earlier, but whether you think that the Giornate's decision to go online will impact discourses around film preservation in general.
That's a really good question. I think if a larger number of people tune in to what we're doing in October, I think that they might be surprised to learn more about what's involved in terms of film preservation. And what I mean by that is not just workloads, but financing. The fact that so many film archives are struggling desperately to get the money to preserve the films that they have. And then on the other hand, you have a place like the Danish Film Institute, which got a phenomenal grant from the Danish government to digitize every Danish silent film that exists. And then to make it available. And that's a phenomenal thing. And for people who think that, oh, well, there can't be that many. Actually, Danish silent film before the First World War was one of the most important industries in the world. One of the most important film industries and one of the most advanced. So it's a significant amount of film and a significant, input of money by the government and a real beacon of hope for film preservationists all around the world. Unfortunately, most governments aren't as enlightened in terms of preserving moving picture images as the Danish government is at the moment. So I'm hoping that indeed by highlighting this sort of discourse, we can indeed raise awareness for both the beauty that comes from film preservation and in terms of all sorts of things, in terms of screening films at the right speed, restoring original colors. And there are some, you know, as you know very well, the color palettes of the silent era were extraordinary. All of these sorts of things, if that can be furthered by going online, then that can only be a good thing.
Yeah. Finally, like, I just wanted to ask you this, and maybe this will be the last question about the festival itself. There's so much to talk about. But in terms of just the decision that was taken, do you feel that this situation with the lockdown and the pandemic has sort of prompted bigger engagement with newer technologies, especially for a festival like Le Giornate, which, you know, might have been struggling a little bit with maybe online presence?
Yes, I think that's probably true. But one of my concerns, frankly, let's face it, for the last, at this point, it may even be 20 years when Peter Greenaway began talking about the death of cinema and all that bullshit. And that's been a statement, a phrase that's been thrown out for a number of years at this point. And, you know, with Netflix and the decline of cinemas and all of that sort of thing. But for me, one of the reasons why I never lost hope is that I truly believe that somewhere deep within our human psyche, we have a need for the pleasure of collective film going and going to the cinema together. So I don't think that really the death of cinema is something that we need to worry about. I don't think that all of the festivals that are forced to go online now are somehow going to find that they're not able to go back into a live event afterwards. I really don't think that that's going to be the case. So it's good that we're opening ourselves up to new technologies and becoming aware. And indeed, that could be a way of continuing a sort of year-long programming for many festivals rather than just the 1 week or the 10 days or what have you that where people congregate for a live event. That is certainly a possibility. But I'm not concerned that, as I know I've heard other people tell me, that I'm not concerned that this is somehow a kind of death by a thousand cuts and this is the ultimate cut.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that it's only been a couple of weeks and people are already craving the theatrical experience. So maybe when the cinemas will reopen, people will appreciate them again, because I did feel like, I don't know, the theatrical thing was a little in decline. I don't know why. Maybe it was just a more complex problem than we all think, but it could lead to a resurgence.
Yes, exactly. And it's an economic problem, of course. But also that's a good point about the word you just used, resurgence, I think is a really good one in this case, too, because I think many of us, speaking to friends and colleagues, at this point, and it's only fairly early in, let's face it, to the whole lockdown, to the whole COVID situation, we're already saturated with online events. I can't keep up, and it's all a blurring for me. The number of online festivals that there are, the number of emails I receive suggesting that I visit this site or that site to view films online. Nobody can take that amount of material, and I think we're all going to, unfortunately, reach a point fairly soon where we're thinking, really, another one? So it behooves all of us to figure out ways of making ourselves unique. And that's, I think, going to be the real challenge. How do we stand above a very, very crowded online presence at the moment?
Yeah, that's interesting, because you mentioned earlier that it's hard to focus when you're writing, but is it also hard to focus when you're watching films? I think that that's something that I feel myself. So do you find that's true?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely, I do. I mean, during lockdown, I was expecting to watch much more than I wound up doing and to read much more than I wound up doing. But, and so I was sort of, you know, kicking myself, why aren't I doing more of that? And you reach a point where you have to realize that every little task that you do or did, becomes an achievement, and that you have to focus on that rather than, you know, beating yourself up because you're not watching two films a day or even one film a day, frankly. So yeah, I think there is a problem with concentration. And let's face it, even before all of this, how often when you're watching something online, do you put it on pause to make yourself a coffee? Do you put it on pause to go to the bathroom? Do you have lunch or what have you? So that's another thing that we have to fight, and we have to realize what sorts of films also do we want to put online? We don't want to really put online the big spectacles that without question are going to be things that you want to see on a big screen. I don't think if you put something online that's 3 hours long, that's really wise.
That's a good point. So, Jay, having said that, and so just to kind of wrap it all up, and we have been talking about watching films. I know it's been difficult to watch stuff, but have you seen anything recently that you'd like to share? And it can be anything at all from past or present.
Oh, gosh. I'm going through a bunch of the DVDs that I have. I've got quite a collection over the years. And so I've watched for the first time, finally, the 1956 British film noir, Yield to the Night, directed by J. Lee Thompson, starring Diana Dors. And I was really blown away from beginning to end. It's such a beautifully crafted, beautifully shot and performed, sensitive film. And it was really nice to see Diana Dors at her finest.
Wow. Gotta check that one out. Jay, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise for me too. Take care, Matt. Thanks.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.